exactly what they're going to, the disciples are going to go to the lost sheep of Israel. So his focus is on the Jews. It's preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them because they were weary and scattered like sheep, having no shepherd. Keep that in mind again. We're going to look at that shepherd and sheep all through this chapter. And he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of harvest that he would send or to send out laborers into his harvest." This is the biblical view of evangelism. This is certainly what the Reformed view would be, that we pray for laborers and the laborers go out. And it is, notice there, his harvest. One waters, one plants, God gives the increase. And so he lays out a good case here, even amongst the Jews. Verse chapter 10, "And when he had called his disciples, his 12 disciples to them, he gave them power over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. And the names of the 12 apostles are these first." So notice here, he calls them disciples, and then he calls them apostles. So he's identifying them. We made a point last week that there's 12 apostles. They're always listed with Peter first and Judas last, and that they're always in three groups of four. So notice as we read, the names of these are first, Simon, who's also called Peter, appears to be the leader, Andrew, his brother, who actually brought Peter to Christ, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother. These are also known as the sons of thunder. Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. Interesting that Matthew identifies himself as a tax collector, right? The one that was a thief and saved by grace here. James, the son of Alphaeus, Lebedeus, whose surname is Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite. This is probably Simon the Zealot, what most think. One that was as a terrorist trying to overthrow the Roman government. And they were known for carrying a dagger in their belt and assassinating. So there's an interesting group that God has called here. It's his harvest. And so he's called out people that you and I probably wouldn't have picked, but he certainly did. And then Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. As I mentioned last week, all 11 were born or came from Galilee, northern Israel, except for Judas, who probably came from down in southern Galilee. And so we have an interesting group here. And then he talks to the 12, verse 5. Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, "Do not go to the way of the Gentiles or to the city of the Samaritans." This was consistent with what Jesus was doing. He was going to the synagogues, but go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. Remember that phrase again, the sheep. "And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the leper, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belt, nor bags for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staff, for a worker is worthy of his food. And whatever city you enter in, inquire who it is worthy and stay there until you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. If the household is worthy, let your peace be upon it. But if it's not worthy, let your peace be returned to you. And whoever will not receive you, nor hear your words when you depart from the house or the city, shake off the dust from your feet. Surely I say to you, it will be more tolerable in the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city." So here's the 12. They're being sent out, special commission here, and given clear instructions. They were, Jesus was moved with compassion. He tells them to pray, and he delegates the 12. I made the point last week that they are to pray that the Lord of harvest would send out laborers into the harvest, and the ones that were praying are the ones that were sent out. They were sent out as the 12 laborers into the harvest. So that is, they were given authority and power, the same authority that Jesus Christ had. What did they not have authority to do that he did, that Dave taught us in chapter 9? forgive sin. They did not have the authority to forgive sin. They were given strictly this authority to heal all kinds of diseases. They could cast out demons. They were to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That was their focus. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on. So last week, we ended at verse 5. Any questions or comments before we move on? Any thoughts you might have had this week? Beck? I don't know. All I'm making the point is that the disciples here are called the apostles. Other places, Jesus has other disciples. John 6, many of his disciples walked away from him. This specific group of disciples are also called the 12 apostles. So, yeah, Newton?
At the beginning of verse 4,
yes.
Where Simon is called a Canaanite.
Yes. And that's what most, I think some of the other translations would translate it as zealot. Most of the commentators would say this is Simon the Zealot. So it is interesting there how it's written. Any other thoughts? It was an interesting group, right, if nothing else. I mean, these were fishermen, tax collectors, terrorists. They were a strong-willed, outspoken. They needed a lot of work. And Jesus picks out 12. I can tell you, I can bet that if we were making a search committee today, we probably wouldn't pick out any of the 12. Peter certainly shines forth as the example of one that turns out to be a leader. We see that in the early book of Acts when he speaks. James, we learned last week that James was, of course, the first martyr killed. There is just an interesting group. Andrew brings Peter to Jesus. Don't hear much more about him. He's responsible, probably a disciple of John the Baptist, and comes and brings Jesus. So, all right, let's look at verse 5 through 7. Here we were looking at the mission. The 12 was the focus on the Jews, the Old Testament people of God. Notice the message, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. We've seen that in Matthew 4:17. That was the exact same message of John the Baptist. Remember, the kingdom of God is at hand, or kingdom of heaven is at hand. This was the message of John the Baptist, in Matthew 3, and Jesus in Matthew 4. And so it's consistent. This is an extension of Jesus' own ministry here. Notice here, they weren't to start something unique. This wasn't 12 sent out to come up with some new plan, to somehow come up with some kind of new start, but they were to carry on. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. They would carry on the mission of John the Baptist, of Jesus, and then into the uttermost parts of the world as we get to the end of the book of Acts. Interesting to me here, the long-suffering and compassion of God for the Jews. You can't deny it here. he's going, by the time we get to verse 15, it's kind of interesting, his response to them. But there is a long suffering for the Jews. Turn back to Deuteronomy 7 with me. And starting with Abraham and him calling out Abraham to be the father of the Jews, and the promises made in Genesis 6 and 15 and following. Deuteronomy 7, verse 7. Just listen to God's compassion here. The Lord did not set his love or choose you because you were more number than any other people, for you were the least of all people. God doesn't think like we do. He looked down, he sees Abraham. He says, I'm going to make you a great nation. By you, all the nations of the world will be blessed. But to the Jews specifically, he says, I chose you because you were the least of all people. But, notice verse 8, because the Lord loves you and because he would keep the oath which he swore to your fathers, the Lord has brought you out of this with his mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage and the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So we see God's love toward the Jews the whole time, even here into the New Testament. And as he sends out his 12 specifically to the household of the Jews here. Paul also understood this in Romans 1:16. He says what? What is it? To the Jew first. The gospel always went to the Jew first. And you can argue, you can make a point here, but all it is that for some reason, God set his sovereign love upon the Jews. We get to Matthew 28, we're going to see that the Jews, to the Jews first, is the throughout the gospel. What's interesting about this to me, and I hope to you, is Peter understood God's plan to take the gospel to the Jews, but Peter also reminded the Jews that it was the Jews that crucified Jesus. And so God is showing his loving kindness to the Jews. He's doing everything he can, as it were. Well, I should say everything he can. He's sending out his messengers to the Jews. At the same time, he knows that it will be the Jews that kill him. And look at Acts chapter 2. This is the same Peter that is here chosen by God to be one of his ambassadors. When we get to Acts 2, Acts 2:36. Notice Peter's words as he's speaking here. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. And so, Peter, I understand this, that God is long-suffering to the Jews. From the time of Abraham, they have walked away. He's brought them out of bondage. He's kept them. He's brought them. He sends his disciples to the 12 tribes of Israel, as it were. And even with the understanding that they are going to be the ones to kill him. Notice Peter, James in Acts 7 here, or excuse me, Stephen in Acts 7. Look at verse 51. Stephen comes to the same conclusion. Here's Stephen's description of the Jews. Acts 51. You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you always resist the Holy Spirit as your father did, so do you. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute, and they killed those who forbid the coming of the just one, of whom you now have become betrayers and murderers. You wonder why he got stoned? Well, a family-friendly message or a seeker-sensitive message. Notice this in verse 53. Who have received the law by the direction of angels and have not kept it. So here we see God's sovereignty over all things to the Jews first. The Jews are responsible, according to two apostles here, at least one, the Stephen and the Paul, or Peter, that they are responsible for the death of Jesus. It's an amazing thing to see God's compassion here. Jesus has compassion in chapter 9 for the lost sheep of Israel. Dave? Oh, I think there's no doubt it's the Pharisees, yeah, and the leaders of the Jews. Context here. We're also going to look at 15 later on. Speaking to the Jews, surely I say to you, it will become more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. And so I just want us to see God's sovereignty, his love, his long-suffering, yet his judgment, and it goes together, right? And it's for us to see also. Verse 8 here, here's the commission to the 12. Basically, it's do exactly as what I've done, Jesus is saying. Notice here, verse 8, heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. As we said, he can do everything that Jesus did except forgive sin. And so they had this power. They were given authority over death, demons, sickness, and not power to forgive sin. The authority given to 12 over death and demons and sickness was given to fulfill the message of Christ. That was a specific message here. I'm giving you this power and this authority to go to the Jews. There's a purpose here. That's the direction you are to go. And you are to minister to them. Remember from verses 9, from 9:38, they were laborers sent forth by the Lord of harvest. So this is their mission. And it says here, heal the sick as laborers sent forth by the Lord of harvest, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have given, freely you have received. Notice here commission comes with exhortation, and that is you have freely been given, freely receive. What do you think that means? Gifts not for sale, right? That's what it means. Jesus is saying, don't sell this. You've been given it freely. It's given to you freely. You're to give it out freely. What's our human tendency? Right? You're the 12. What would you think? Hey, we can make a few bucks on this deal. You know, this is not a bad gig. I can heal the sick, right? I can cleanse the leper. I can do all these wonderful things. And Jesus cautions them here. It was a gift. The 12 was a gift and freely given. So what's the application for us here? Rick? Right. Yeah. Yeah, God gives gifts to men and women today, right? And those gifts are what? For the edification of the body and the evangelism to the lost. We see that. It's still true today. He gives gifts as he pleases. Those gifts are to be used for the spread of the gospel, to encourage others in the body. I think it's clear from Matthew here that Jesus is using his divine power and giving that to the disciples to confront and to show his kingdom. Notice, if you remember in Matthew 8, he's already stated this, Matthew 8, 16 and 17 here. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment and a tear is made. This is a new covenant. Nor do they put new wine in old wine sacks or wineskins, else the wineskins break and the wine is spilled and the wineskins are ruined. But they put new wine in new wineskins and both are preserved. And so Jesus is sending the 12 out with his message. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's a message for particular to the Jews. And but the 12 were under the clear direction and commands of the master. The tendency, again, can you imagine just all you needed was one rogue apostle? That would have been it, just one. So Jesus is very clear here. What you've been given, don't give away. The power and authority here, notice, is given to them. It's not their own, and they are not to do with it as they please. Everything was a gift and to be used for the help of others. And so notice here the Apostle Paul, dealing with pride among the leaders of the Corinth church, reminded them of the same principle. Look at 1 Corinthians 4:7. This is kind of along what Rick is saying. 1 Corinthians 4:7 here. A verse that certainly is familiar to all of us. Notice he says, "Who makes you to differ?" Paul was speaking to the arrogant leaders at Corinth, but he says, "And what do you have that you did not receive? And now you, if you did indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it?" So Jesus is reminding the 12 that what you've freely been given, freely give. He reminds us in 1 Corinthians also. Look at 1 Corinthians 12. He kind of carries this thought on, the same principle here. 1 Corinthians 12:4-7. Paul, speaking of spiritual gifts, there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit, God, that gives the gifts. But there are differences of ministries within those spiritual gifts. There's different ministries, but it's the same Lord. There are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works in all. The manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all, not for your own profit. For to one is given, and then he goes on, special gifts. So just a reminder, what you've been given, you didn't deserve. It was freely given to you. And what you have is to be used for the kingdom. Karen? Yeah. Yes, exactly. And that's really the point to us, isn't it? That we're here. God's given us gifts. Some have different gifts, according to 1 Corinthians 12. Some are more visible than others. But we all have gifts. Those gifts are not to be boasted about. They're not really to be used to gain authority or preference, as it were. They're to be used to build up the kingdom, and the gifts that are given to you, you can't boast about them, because what do you have that you've not received? And as Karen stated, in the big picture, it's really about the kingdom of heaven, isn't it? And about that we are going to be with Christ. John? Yeah, and some people think that this was just a short period of time, right at the beginning of Christ's ministry. It didn't carry on through the whole 3 years. So I don't know. To your point, though, yes, later on as we get through Matthew, they're coming to Jesus and going, "Why can't we cast out the demons that you've given us power to do?" And he goes to the whole speech about, because it comes out with prayer and supplication. But yes, again, it's just for us today, just be reminded of what we have, we've not received, and we've received from God's grace. All right, let's look at 9 and 10 here. Notice here as we go on, they give us some more instructions. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money bag, nor a bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staff, for the worker is worthy of his food. So they weren't to have support. Support was to come from without, not from them. Why would Jesus tell them to, he gives them this gift, freely you've received, freely give. And then he says, don't provide neither gold or silver nor copper for your money belt. What do you think he's trying to teach them? Right. Yeah, and he wants to teach them to live by faith, right? That he's the provider. I think we see that clearly here. The just shall live by faith, as Habakkuk has reminded us about. MacArthur says the apostles not only were not to demand payment for their services, but they were not to amass great amounts of money in advance of the mission. So there was two things here. You're not going to get a lot of money. Freely give. As you've received, so don't amass big amounts of money, but also don't take a lot with you while you're going, so you learn to trust Christ and be dependent on God. Notice the two items that are mentioned here, the money belt or wallet, and in verse 10, maybe a bag for food. So I think he's talking about don't store up a lot of cash, don't take a lot of cash with you, and don't take a lot of food with you. Go out and live by faith. Hold on a second, Beck, and I'll get to you. So think about it. Who of us have ever left on a short trip without something, right? Money, credit card, you know, bank check, something. And even if we're going on a short distance, we usually pack some kind of lunch or some kind of food or drink with us. But this is, they were to go out without anything. And it's certainly different. If you probably heard me say, and I know my kids have, poor preparation produces poor results. This is one of those cases in the sovereignty of God where he's saying, don't make too much of your preparations. I'll take care of you. And trust me, I'm going to give you what you need. There's a reason also, we'll see as we get down here later. Becky, do you have a comment? Yeah, some people think it was clothes, take a suitcase. Others think it was. It is interesting. They are to get something. Notice the end of verse 10, for the worker is worthy for his food. They are to be given something, but it's not because they have to eat, right? And they have to have a place to stay. We'll see that as we get on. But the point is, don't over-prepare here in this case. Dave? That's all right. In this case. Right. Yeah, and I think that is the preparation, the just shall live by faith. I'm not saying that's a universal principle. I'm saying surely this is, in this case, what God's trying to teach them, that they are to do that. Look, it's interesting. He also talks about, verse 10 continues, no extra tunic, clothing, sandals, shoes, or walking stick. John Gill, in his commentary, if you've never read John Gill, you need to read him. In his commentary, says that the prohibition is against extra tunic also applies to the sandals and the staff. So he's saying, don't take a bunch of extra stuff with you. Don't take two things of everything. The NIV reads, or extra sandals or a staff. And so there's some discussion there. There was an old song, I don't know, years ago. Probably you all heard it. Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. And that's the application here. That take just the minimal amount that you can carry. Yes. Sure. Yeah. 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 And in some way or another, we also know that the disciples went back and fished. And during the time they didn't stay with Jesus, as it were, the whole 12 time, they went back and worked and did things, came back and forth. They supported themselves fishing. But yeah, to your point, Tim, certainly as God provided for the Old Testament Jews, he was capable of providing here. I personally think this was a short-term period of ministry. And I think it was a kickoff, as it were, campaign to Jesus' ministry here early on. You can may have a different a view of that. Not only was Jesus trying to teach the 12 to live by faith, Jesus wanted those to receive, to be generous with what they had given. Notice here, 1 Corinthians 9, Paul picks up this same principle in verses 13 and 14. Notice what Paul says here. I can find it. Verse 13, do you not know that those who minister of the holy things eat the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offering of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded those who preach the gospel to live from the gospel. So not only is Jesus trying to teach the 12 here that they are to be live by faith, he's teaching those that they're ministering to provide food for them, to provide housing and clothing for them. So it goes both ways here if you look at the end of verse 12. For the worker is worthy of his food. And so he continues here. 1 Timothy 5 talks about the laborer is worthy of his food or his salary. And so there, Jesus isn't saying don't take anything, but take what is given to you. And they're also going to be provided here, as you'll see, a place to live or a place to stay. Notice 11 and 12. Whatever city or town you enter, inquire who it is that is worthy and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. And so picture this. The 12 are going out in different directions. They're going to the Jewish community. They're going to Jewish homes, maybe synagogues. And they're going into a city. They're meeting people, and people are going to invite them into their homes to stay and to live and to provide food for them. And the disciples have to make a discernment here. Notice, inquire who is worthy, or I think the idea is godly or maybe hospitable. Try to find someone who will put you up, who will let you stay in their home, and then live with them. There obviously are none that are worthy from the gospel standpoint, but they need to find someone who has the ability to provide food for them and shelter. Verse 11b, notice, stay till it's time to leave that city. I think the idea here is stay till you go out. Don't bounce around. Find a place to minister from and go out from that location. Notice verse 12 here. And when you go into a household, greet it. I think the idea is telling people what your mission is. Why are you here? Here's what I'm doing. I've been sent out by the master. I'm looking for a place to stay. I'm looking for someone who has hospitality. And from this headquarters, I can minister to my do my ministry here. And they are to greet them. Certainly, they are to be kind. They don't demand that they live in the house. They go out as servants looking for a place to live. And then notice verse 13, if the household is worthy or hospitable or godly, let your peace be upon it. But if it's not, let your peace be returned to you. What do you think that means? Any ideas? Well, I think it has the idea, if the house are generous or kind, give them your blessing. I think that's just what Jesus is saying here. Give your blessing to them. And if it turns out that they are not who you thought they were, remove your blessing from them. It's very, very clear, I think, that if they're not going to help you, take your peace with you. Take your blessing back from them. All of us have stories. We've gone into homes or hotels, and when you open the door, it's not what you expected, right? And that's we stayed in a hotel up in Dayton or Springfield one year, and we had a picture of the hotel. That's what they had, postcards. And when we got there, we were looking at the postcard, and we're like, address, postcard. Didn't exactly look like the picture on the outside. And then when we opened the door and went inside the room, we decided that this wasn't the place. This was the right place according to the directions, but we weren't staying there for the night, I could tell you that. And so that's the idea here. If it doesn't turn out to be what you think it is, after you bless them, take your peace back, take your greetings back from them. John Gill again says, the prayers and goodwill of the apostles towards this one will be void. I think that's pretty clear. I've given my blessing to you. Didn't turn out the way we thought it would. I take my blessing back. I don't pray for you anymore. Certainly maybe a little different than what we see today. So looks like we're out of time. Notice here the apostles, just I'll leave, close with this, they've been given a lot of authority, great gifts and power to use of the kingdom, yet when it comes to where to stay or not stay, they were given no gift, but they were to go by their experience. And so sometimes God gives clear direction, sometimes we go by our experience, doing the best that we can. So I'll close with that, and we'll continue this next week. If you have any comments, see me afterwards. If you would. So thanks.